World News Today, brought to you by Continental Radio and Television Corporation, makers of Admiral Radio, America's smart set. By shortwave broadcast, direct from important overseas stations, as well as leading news centers of our own country, CBS correspondents are waiting to bring you a complete report from the world's political and battlefronts. But first, here's Doug Edwards.
The Germans have put Denmark under martial law today, but resistance continues and Danish naval forces have scuttled most of their fleet. This revolt and the death of King Boris of Bulgaria menace two widespread flanks of Germany's European fortress. Reports from Madrid say the Germans have forbidden Berliners to leave their homes during the night in an effort to stop the mass exodus to safety outside the city. Russia reports continued success in all sectors of the Soviet offensive line. Now, for our first news direct from overseas, Admiral Radio takes you to CBS Algiers. John Daly reporting.
The Northwest African Air Force yesterday continued the blitz on Axis communications in southern Italy. Flying fortresses blasted Terni, 45 miles north of Rome. Medium bombers hit the railroad concentrations at Aversa and Cancello near Naples. And a strong mixture of light, medium, and fighter bombers dropped the heaviest load of bombs since the end of the Tunisian campaign in attacks ranging over the toe and instep of Italy, with particular emphasis on Catanzaro and Lamezia. Enemy fighter resistance was strong in central Italy. Of a total of some 80 Axis planes that tried to intercept over Terni, Aversa, and Cancello, 20 were shot down. In the operations over the toe and instep, enemy fighters offered resistance only over Lamezia. Spitfire shot down four of them. The Axis lost another six fighters in Sardinia when a force of 10 jumped Allied P-40 fighter bombers attacking industrial targets. For the heavy toll of Axis fighters taken in these operations, we lost eight planes. As I write this report in the press room here at Allied Force Headquarters, the maps on which we followed the campaign of Sicily are being taken off the wall. In Sicily, so recently a battleground, the people are learning what democracy means under the indulgent instruction of the Allied military government. Sicilians are a bit surprised at an Allied-sponsored newspaper, Free Sicily, which criticizes friend and foe alike. They're not used to freedom of the press. I stood in a provincial courtroom while the battle for Sicily still raged and heard a British judge roundly cheered because he released a poor peasant picked up by the local police for gathering in some worthless Axis junk left after a battle. They're not used to justice either. A real hero of the Allied military government in Sicily, as far as the Sicilians go, is Private Giuseppe Adami of the United States Army. He has played the violin for Toscanini, toured Europe in concerts, appeared in Boston and Chicago, and at the Metropolitan in New York. He is now assigned to civilian relief and is in charge of the breadlines in Sicily. He is firm and fair with the hungry Sicilians. He has a little trouble with women who simulate pregnancy to get to the head of the breadline by putting pillows under their dresses, but he settles all problems with dispatch. Thousands of Sicilians who can't read newspapers and thus learn what we stand for and what we're fighting for find all the answers in Private Adami. They have given him the honorary title of Professore. And when he appears, the cheers thunder out for the professor, for America, and for Farina. Now back to CBS in New York.
More news in just a moment, but first here's Warren Sweeney with a word from Admiral Radio.
You've all seen pictures of the famous rubber boat that American ingenuity has provided to save the lives of our boys forced down at sea. One of the most precious pieces of equipment that goes into these boats is a little box with a crank handle on the top, a portable radio that can mean the difference between life and death. An antenna held aloft by a box kite, current generated by a twist of the crank handle, and an SOS brings one of the renowned Navy flying boats to the rescue. A crew of American boys has been saved to carry death and destruction to our enemies on other vital missions. Here is another example of the many dramatic roles radio is playing in the present war. It is typical of the many types of equipment now being turned out at top speed in the great Admiral plants exclusively for our armed services. Admiral engineers and research technicians are concentrating on the one problem of making the delicate, precise, yet sturdy and dependable instruments needed to win this war. And a post-war admiral to grace your home will also bear the stamp of the skills that are now going into these grim weapons of war. The post-war admiral that will once more be America's smart set. Now, here once again for Admiral Radio is Doug Edwards.
In London, there's considerable speculation about the latest German move in the occupied countries, the clamping down of martial law on Denmark. Now, Admiral Radio takes you to CBS London, Larry Lesser reporting.
There's trouble a couple of hundred miles away from here in Denmark.
The Germans show no signs of relaxing the martial law they clamped on this corner of Fortress Europe at dawn this morning. This straining at their chains by the Danes may have far-reaching effects. There are those in London who are not without hope that this may be the spark that sets the whole of Europe afire against its German oppressors. The immediate reasons for the Danish revolt are not altogether clear. The leader of the Free Danes in London, Christmas Muller, who escaped across the North Sea to England a year ago, says that the Danes are resisting the Nazi effort to impose German law in Denmark. But other observers here point out that since the cancellation of the German military right-of-way across Sweden, the Germans have been forced to detour their military traffic to Norway through Denmark. If British parachutists have been partly responsible for the wave of sabotage which swept across Denmark, there has been no disposition on the part of British military authorities to acknowledge this. It would naturally be a military secret. The rumors that the Germans have arrested King Christian cannot be confirmed here, but it's believed that a general strike has broken out in Denmark. The German military decree has prohibited all strikes. Anyone starting one will be punished, probably by death. It's interesting to remember that when she was free, Denmark abolished the death penalty years ago. Sweden has canceled the two train ferries that run regularly across to Denmark, and all Swedish telegraph and telephone communications have been cut off. England was unusually quiet today. Last night, the Royal Air Force stayed at home, and there have been no reports of any air activity across the channel today. There's one small item that I can report for the benefit of those who like good luck charms. When Lord Louis Mountbatten goes to the Far East as Allied Supreme Commander in Southeast Asia, he'll take a mascot with him. It's the small enameled figure of a naval signalman with his arms extended in the semaphore signal V for Victory. It's been on the radiator cap of Mountbatten's car ever since he became Chief of Combined Operations. I return you now to CBS in New York.
Red Army forces advancing on Poltava, the big German rail and supply center 77 miles southwest of Kharkov, have driven across an important river barrier and smashed the enemy's defenses. Moscow dispatches don't say what river has been crossed, but it's possible it's the Psal, which runs parallel to the Vorskla, along which one Soviet column is advancing on Poltava. Yesterday, the Russians reached the east bank of the Psal by passing Poltava on the north. Both west and south of Kharkov, the Soviets are driving forward, their rate slowed only by dense minefields and roads and bridges which the Germans are demolishing as they retreat. Moscow says the fighting in this area is assuming a highly mobile character, with swift-moving Soviet mechanized units taking one enemy strong point after another. Frontline dispatches also report good progress in the hilly area of the Donets Basin southwest of Voroshilovgrad. On the Svesk-Bryansk sector north of Kharkov, the Russians are reported to have reached a point some 15 miles from the important Bryansk-Kornatop-Kiev railroad. Now here in our New York studios to discuss the fighting on the Russian front is Major George Fielding Elliott.
The Russians appear to be applying the lessons which they learned at considerable cost in the last phases of their great winter counteroffensive last February. Then, as now, they held Kharkov and Belgorod. Then, as now, they drove southwestward from those fortresses to cut the communications of the German army down in the great semicircle of the Donets Basin. They came within an ace of success, only to be thwarted at the last moment by a violent German counterattack driving eastward from Poltava. When this German blow fell, the Russians were within a few miles of the last railway junction controlling the communications of the German Donets army. This time, the Russians appear to be in greater force and to be better consolidated. Moreover, they are striking for Poltava first in a great swinging arc pivoting on Kharkov and smashing across the rivers Vorskla and Psel to drive southward to the Dnieper behind Poltava. Once Poltava is in Russian hands and firmly held, it will block the route which the German counterattack of last winter took and will thus protect the flank of those other Russian armies, which can then proceed with the reduction of the rail junctions between the Dnieper and the Donets. Before this happens, the German troops must either be out of the Donets basin or be trapped there. There are some signs that the Germans have this time chosen to withdraw rather than to try a counterattack, for which, in the light of the situation elsewhere in Europe, they may not wish to spare the reserves. Latest reports from Russia speak of extensive German minefields and destruction of bridges and roads, all of which are measures, especially the minefields, which the Germans found very useful in protecting retreats in Tunisia and in Sicily. Also, the Russians report their troops in the area of Voroshilovgrad, far down in the depth of the Donets Basin, as advancing. The Germans may have determined at last to take the step which has so long seemed inevitable in view of the Russian situation, to withdraw in Russia to a shorter and more easily defended front where they can stand and still release some reserves from the Russian front for use elsewhere.
That was Columbia's military analyst, Major George Fielding Elliott. In the Southwest Pacific, General MacArthur's flyers are still hammering Japanese bases. On the central Solomon's land front, Allied forces are getting set for new blows. But for the story in the lower Pacific, Admiral Radio takes you to CBS Honolulu, Webley Edwards reporting.
The fall of Barrow Pearl, last Japanese outpost on New Georgia Island, has now put the pressure on the island of Kolombangara from two sides. There's a Jap airdrome at Vila, some 10 miles across the Kula Gulf from Bairro Cove. Watch for a systematic pounding of this airdrome. Two things have been worthy of special note in the Solomons. First is the excellent use made of American artillery in cleaning up Jap points of resistance, best at Munda and now at Bairro Cove. Teamwork by American artillery and Air Force bombing gave the Japs no rest. The second development of great interest is the continuation of the bypass method of occupying islands. It happened first up north in the Aleutians, you'll recall, when the Americans bypassed Kiska to occupy Attu, thus squeezing Kiska between two pressures, pounding the island 106 times by air and 15 times by surface warship, until Kiska was abandoned by the Japs. This same bypass of Kolombangara to occupy Vella Vella Island puts the Japs in the same fix there at Kolombangara that they were in Kiska, except they have no Aleutian fog in which to escape. There's a chance the Jap Navy might send a force down to aid Kolombangara, but it's a slim one. The Jap Navy has very likely left the army to its fate down there. If they do decide to send some warships down, the United States fleet is already smacking its lips over the prospect. And so our side is now threatening the Jap with a three-pronged offensive along the great arc of the Pacific Front. From the north, there's a strong threat toward Karamushiro, the Kuril Islands, and Japan itself. Our Solomon's forces threaten the Jap toward Rabaul, perhaps even further north if we keep up the leapfrog method of bypassing Jap-held islands there. The New Guinea forces threaten both Rabaul and the East Indies areas. Expect more action very soon. This is Webley Edwards in Honolulu. I return you now to New York.
Madrid is one of the few neutral capitals in Europe. It's the receiving point for both Allied and Axis reports. And so for a cross-section of the latest news as viewed in Spain, Admiral Radio takes you back across the Atlantic to CBS Madrid, Glenn Stadler reporting.
Here in Madrid, August is hot physically and cool politically. So General Franco, his ministers, and the diplomats have been passing the month on the northern shores. But we who remained have been kept busy by stories of growing unrest and jitteriness that have flooded in from Germany and the occupied countries. Italy, of course, is considered as pretty much out of the picture, except for the battleground. The other day I watched a German train come in from Berlin, over an hour late. Not the passengers told of the terrific damage there. They said that at least 5,000 were killed in last Monday night's raid alone, that some even committed suicide rather than face another horrible night. Each evening, thousands fight to reach comparative safety in the open country. A trip which normally required half an hour now takes nearly three because of disrupted transportation. At night, the Reich capital is virtually a ghost town. Thoughts of 1918 are vivid. huge new posters on each street corner threatening the death penalty for looting. The Spanish correspondent reports that when Germans meet, they ask fearfully, "What next?" And when they part, they no longer say, "Auf Wiedersehen," until we meet again, but will we meet again? All southward in Greece, the situation is no worse, according to a letter received in Madrid. The writer said that about one-fifth of the population, or nearly 1.5 million, have died of an unnatural death in the past 2.5 years. In Paris, police admit they are powerless to control the seething resistance movement. Despite Paris's troops and Laval's police, hundreds of troops are prepared for the day. That day of invasion holds a spotlight of interest in Spain also. Most everyone no longer has any illusions about the outcome of the war. A small but indicative sign of the times is found in the language schools here. English, until recently third place in popularity, has risen to first over French and German. This is Glenn Stadler in Madrid, returning you to Doug Edwards from New York.
Back in this country, Bill Slocum, Jr. is standing by to broadcast from the Navy airplane carrier Wolverine. So for his report, Admiral Radio takes you to CBS Chicago. Bill Slocum, Jr. reporting.
I'm standing now in the flight control deck of a good-sized American aircraft carrier, knifing her way under full steam in the general direction of Chicago, Illinois. In fact, I can see Chicago's skyline glimmering in the distance. For strange as it seems, this carrier, Captain Charles Lee's SS Wolverine, plies the fresh waters of Lake Michigan, teaching Navy flyers the precise art of landing dive bombers, torpedo, and fighter planes on the decks of pitching ships. Below me is the flight deck, and scattered along its sides are the members of the plane-handling crews. They give the carrier a slight Walt Disney touch in technicolor, for each man wears a shirt of yellow, green, pink, or red with skin-tight helmets in matching colors, and in many cases, goggles. Each color designates a different job. To carry out the weird effect, a couple of baby Frankensteins totter around dressed from head to foot in white asbestos. They'll go into any flame a crash might start. Standing beside me in a tiny booth that juts out over the flight deck is Lieutenant Commander Walter Blatchford, the Wolverine's air officer. He runs the show during landing operations and supplements the visual signals with a little sideline coaching via shortwave radio. That's flight quarters, so the planes must be near.
That is right, Mr. Slocum. Captain, the planes are in sight.
Wolverine, from Jake, 1-5, signal. Affirmative. I'm approaching the ship on the port quarter.
That was from one of the planes. Signal affirmative means that the pilot of Jig 15 has the Wolverine in sight.
Jig 15 from Wolverine. The ship is coming into the wind. Stand by to land aboard.
Wolverine, from Jake, 1-5, Wilco, and out.
Wilco means will comply, synonymous to the more common Roger.
Qualification group from Wolverine. Enter the landing circle and land aboard.
The planes are now breaking formation and losing altitude. Their wheels begin to poke out from their sleek bottoms, and quickly, unbelievably quickly, they've changed their formation from a V to a landing circle. They have formed this circle on the Wolverine's port side, and the first plane is making its approach to land aboard. At the head of the runway, the signal officer, or flag waver, is waving his paddles over his head, and with some fervor, too. The plane roars back up again. Commander, what's he telling the pilot?
Mr. Slocum, we try to keep the signals to a minimum. The one you just saw is one of the most important. It's the wave-off. The pilot was too low for a landing, a fact which I'm now going to let him in on. Jig 1-5, this is Wolverine. Too low and slow on your last approach. Enter the groove higher. Watch the signal officer and answer signals promptly. Acknowledge. Over.
This is Jig 1-5. Wilco and out.
Now another plane approaches for a landing. It's in the groove, which is carrier talk for being right above the ship's wake, headed for the deck. The signal officer waves his paddles just a bit. The plane is not quite level. There, he levels off. He's almost over the ship's tail now. The signal officer flashes a paddle across his throat. Pilot cuts his motor. He's There it is. He's coming in. Listen. Just a few feet and he stops. Most of us are familiar with the braking technique on a carrier. For security reasons, I cannot describe exactly how it's done. But it's done quickly and efficiently. Now the plane handling crew is all over the plane. Each man had an assigned job. One man, Fly One, the plane dispatcher, has checked tires and motor. Now he's standing in front of the plane, whirling his right arm. The pilot revs up his motors. Fly One points down the deck, and the plane is off. Listen. Rookie pilots from the Glenview Air Station have made some 15,000 landings on the Wolverine without accident, an unbeatable tribute to the Navy and naval aviation on this, its 30th birthday. I return you now to CBS in New York and Doug Edwards.
Next, for news of other developments here at home, Admiral Radio takes you to CBS Washington, Robert Lewis reporting.
Prime Minister Churchill's visit to Washington this week is expected to result in the formulation of Anglo-American plans for the administration of the occupied European countries as they're liberated from Hitler's grasp. Diplomatic observers here see this as the main object of the Prime Minister's visit for several reasons. First, all plans for military operations against both Germany and Japan presumably are already well on the way toward perfection. And secondly, it's felt that the two English-speaking countries will want to have worked out beforehand, and this includes an agreement with Russia, the basic principles that'll be followed when the Allied armies start to put the squeeze on Hitler. At the same time, the report that a meeting of Stalin, Churchill, and Roosevelt is imminent is discounted here somewhat on the theory that any military operations involving a second front in Europe would be strictly a British and American affair. However, a meeting of other high-ranking representatives from the three countries is not ruled out for the simple reason that if Churchill and Roosevelt do discuss post-war policies, the Russians would be fully informed and consulted. The Office of Price Administration has announced restrictions on the sale of coal to homeowners in 12 northeastern states and the District of Columbia. Effective September 1st, such purchases will be limited to 50% of last year's total consumption until the 1st of December. Now back to CBS New York and Doug Edwards.
Once again, here's Warren Sweeney with a message from our sponsor.
There is little of the beauty of America's smart set in the equipment now pouring from the great Admiral plants. For this is war, and the weapons of war are grim, stern, ruthless, not beautiful in the sense that we once knew beauty. All the efforts of Admiral scientists, engineers, technicians are being devoted to this one task, the task of making Admiral-built electronic equipment the durable, dependable instruments our boys at the front need to bring us final victory. And to you on the home front, Admiral gives this assurance. The Admiral radio that will be yours after the war will include all the advances in the science of electronics now going into these sturdy weapons of war. In the meantime, take care of the set you now have. Call your Admiral dealer in case of emergency and be assured that he will do everything in his power to keep your radio operating at peak efficiency. After the war, Admiral, in peacetime, the world's largest manufacturer of radio phonograph combinations with automatic record changers, will bring you an even better Admiral radio than you knew before.
Attention, men and women of Chicago. Your country needs you. Help build vital communication equipment for our frontline fighters at the great Admiral plants in Chicago. The work is easy and interesting. No experience is necessary, and you'll be paid while learning. The factories are modern with the latest type machinery as well as company cafeterias for your convenience. Simply go to the employment office of the Admiral plant at 4150 North Knox Avenue by taking a Montrose streetcar to 4600 West. Or take the Armitage Avenue car to the Admiral plant at 3815 Armitage. Get into radio now. The modern business with a great future. Be sure to listen again next Sunday when Continental Radio and Television Corporation brings you World News Today, direct from the leading news centers of the world. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.
WBBM Chicago,